Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Okay, folks, you are listening, you're tuned in to the latest chapter, the latest list of adventures from life on Planet Porky with myself, the Porkmeister, and, of course, a rock chick writer extraordinaire, Ms. Leslie Ann Jones. And Leslie Ann, as the listeners are listening to this this latest podcast, I'm so delighted to say it is the last one we'll ever do whilst the doors of our pubs remain closed. Whoopee!
Well, I mean, since you've been banging on about it for such a long time, I actually can't wait for the pubs to open so that you'll find something else to moan about.
Just to shut me up, I see. That's nice, isn't it? You will have this week that I tried to advise the Prime Minister on several occasions. It was the Queen's speech, and I said, Boris, this is your opportunity. Slip in a last paragraph into the Queen's speech and say, look, I've decided that as we've all done so very well with vaccine rollout, as you all behaved so well, as lockdown has been so torturous and painful, I have decided we're going to bring forward the opening of the pubs from next Monday, that's the 17th of May, to this Friday, and we can all have a great weekend. And that would have made him so popular, I could have won in the next election on that one alone. But, you know, of course, he ignored me.
Well, rules is rules, as they say. And, you know, he's got Van Tam and Whitty breathing down his neck at all times, hasn't he? Really?
Yeah.
He's got to be incredibly careful.
Yeah, look, you know, you can't change it now. It's too late and there wouldn't have the beer in. But I visited a couple of nice hostelries this week, had lunch in the garden yesterday with my accountant, actually. And, you know, it's really great to know that very soon we'll be able to go indoors. By the way, it's not total freedom. It's not like it used to be in the old days. You know, you and I could be strolling down Fleet Street, decide to nip into the, the Bell or something like that. And, you know, even lean up against the bar, have a couple of drinks and then walk out. You can't. It's still table allocation from next Monday. So
yeah, I know. And there's no spontaneity about it. You can't just bump into somebody
exactly
the way we used to all the time and say, oh, have you got time for a quick one? You know, you can't do that anymore.
Totally agree. You might get to the door and they say, I'm sorry, we haven't got any tables. Hard luck. You know, it's horrible.
Yeah. Have you booked? That's going to be the new catchphrase, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And by the way, you know, technophobes like me are at a distinct disadvantage because I don't know how to get the pub app on my phone. I mean, I just cannot get the idea of sitting there watching waiters and waitresses and bar staff walking past you and refusing to take an order and telling you to do it on your phone. I mean, how do I know it ever gets to the other end that anybody's taking any notice? It's very frustrating for seasoned drinkers, seasoned pub goers like myself.
Well, it's a bit like my mum. You know, I keep saying to mum because she's 86. She still insists on getting a cab into the nearest little town where she lives to get cash out to pay this one and that one. And I say, mum, you know, you don't have to do that anymore because people are not supposed to take cash anymore. You're supposed to be able to just transfer the money to their account. But of course, she doesn't work online. She doesn't have any mobile phone or laptop or anything like that. So she can't manage all that. And she's quite terrified of the fact that cash is on the way out. So it's a similar thing to what you're saying, that this reliance on technology is going to stuff an awful lot of people.
Oh, it is. And I feel particularly sorry for the elderly. My mum would have been like that. You know, my mum, to her dying day, God rest her soul, was always putting £5 away in an envelope in her dresser in the bedroom to pay for the gas bill, you know what I mean? And £5 the electricity bill. In fact, when I was a kid, I used to go and raid the electricity bill envelope when I ran out of money to go out on a Sunday night, because I'd spent all my wages given to me on Thursday by Sunday lunchtime, you know. So
you wicked boy. Doing that. I hope you feel horribly guilty for that.
Well, I never stole it. I always told my mum I was going to borrow it. And, you know, she always turned a blind eye. But I always put it back in the end. But that was my reserve supply of money. Because I don't know about you, but in my first job on the Chester Chronicle, on a Thursday, a woman came round with a trolley with a load of brown envelopes in them and handed you your money in cash, and you could feel the coins in there. So I remember I used to get £22.50 a week, okay? So I had four £5 notes, two £1 notes, and a 50 pence piece. And, you know, that would come on Thursday afternoon, in the pub Thursday night, in the pub Friday lunchtime, Friday night, Saturdays. It was all gone by Sunday morning, usually. And that's the way we lived, I'm afraid.
Did you give your mother housekeeping money?
£5 a week.
Yeah.
Which I then stole back from the electricity envelope.
You know, times have certainly changed.
Yes, they certainly have indeed.
I remember my first wage packet. I used to have a Saturday job at Marks and Spencer in Bromley.
Yeah.
And I was highly paid because most of my friends were getting about £5-6 for a Saturday job.
Yeah.
I was getting £9.
Wow.
For a Saturday Great. Job. And I used to get double time if I worked sort of Christmas days, like Christmas Eve and things like that. Or you know, Easter, things like that. So you'd get double. So I was rolling in it when I was about 15.
Yeah. Well, I was as well, because I did a paper round since the age of about 12 or 13. So there was nothing to spend it on when you were that age. And, you know, you hadn't learned drinking then. But all the way through my sort of later teens, I worked at a petrol station at weekends and during the school holidays when I was still at school. I had loads of money. I used to be able to hire taxis and things, which none of my mates could do. You know, I was very generous in the pub and the Indian restaurants late at night and all that, because that's just the way I was. But yeah, I've always been lucky enough to be able to sort of keep my head above water. And, you know, now that you get into your sort of autumn of your life, you worry about staying that way for the rest of your life because we're all living so long.
Yeah, exactly. But what high rollers we were.
Yeah, indeed, we were. Anyway, look, let's talk about something a little bit more depressing than the joys of youth, and that is the situation in the Middle East. It terrifies me, the Israel-Hamas situation, Israel and Gaza. And I've worked there, and I've seen the devastation. I've seen the bombings. I didn't ever cover anything in Gaza, which is like South Israel. The wars that I covered there were always north into Beirut, Israel and fighting the PLO, who were based in Beirut, unlike Hamas, which, of course, are based down in Gaza. It's a problem, Leslie Ann, which has no solution.
I think it has no solution because it's been going on for such a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, if you remember the Crusades going right back to sort of the 11th century, they were all about right. the European Christians trying to win back the Holy Land from the Muslims yeah. who captured it in the 600s.
Yeah.
And then in the 19th century, of course, we had the Holy Land, which became subject of diplomatic wrangling. Yeah. And it's been that way ever since. Yeah. This is a problem that's not going away because it's a holy land not only to Christians, but also to Muslims and to Jews.
Sure.
And it's like an eternal triangle that is always going to be explosive. Mm. I cannot imagine what
yeah,
the
answer no, is. No, you're absolutely right. The problem is that Hamas, who are now based in Gaza, aren't interested in peace. They want to wipe Israel off the face of the earth. So apart from somebody coming along and saying, OK, let's disband Israel, there's no solution to the problem because Hamas aren't going to stop fighting until Israel's gone. And Israel ain't going nowhere. That's why I say there's no solution to it.
Well, and because as a resistance movement, you know, their raison d'etre is to keep fighting, isn't it?
Yes.
Otherwise, you know, if there is a solution to it, then they won't exist anymore.
Yeah.
So it's in their best interests to keep the conflict going.
Oh, I totally agree. And they really don't care about casualties because as far as they're concerned, you know, it's the will of Allah and all that kind of stuff. And Israel see no option in their view but to have to hit back harder than they get hit. That's the way they've always been. But I remember going up through Beirut through two towns called Tyre and Sidon, which are coastal towns in what used to be beautiful Beirut. You know, Beirut truly was the sort of you know, the Paris of the Middle East, so to speak. Beirut was certainly a beautiful city, and smashed to pieces. I mean, you've never seen anything like it, honestly. Beirut at the height of the conflict in the Middle East, there wasn't a building left there that didn't have a hole in it or roof blown off or whatever. I don't know how they ever rebuilt it, but they did. And now, of course, it's all in turmoil again. But there we go. It does make you feel so lucky, doesn't it, Miss Jones? It certainly makes me feel so lucky to live in the beautiful country we live in the beautiful continent we live in, because fortunately, in our lifetime, and I think we're the first in, you know, 300 or 400 years, we haven't been involved in any sort of war with our neighbours.
Yeah, so true. But it's also very sad because Jerusalem is a place that I've always wanted to visit. My parents went to Jerusalem and I'd love to go there. But it's unlikely that we ever will be able to because of all this.
Yeah, Jerusalem is an incredible city, particularly Old Jerusalem, the Old City. It is so biblical. I know you might say, well, of course it's biblical. It's where, you know, a lot of what the Bible's all about is based upon. But I've walked the back, you know, the little alleyways and back streets of Jerusalem, the Old City, and I'm not joking. It's almost spiritual. You can almost feel the presence of Jesus Christ or feel the presence of the Lord or something like that. It had an amazing effect on me, honestly. It really did. I felt so different being there and started to, you know, wonder quite seriously about spiritualism and whether it can take you over, you know, in certain areas of the world and certain places. And I'm sure that a lot of Muslim people who go to the holy sites, you know, like Mecca and all that, they must feel the same.
Yeah, well, they feel the same about Jerusalem as well, because it's so meaningful to all three religions.
Yes.
And it's a tragedy to me that people are fighting and losing their lives for the sake of their beliefs. It's the oldest war in the book, isn't it? A religious war.
It is.
And it's just tragic that something that's meant to be the saviour of the world, religion, that people will fight over their religions rather than live peacefully side by side.
No, you make such a very good point. The other thing is, I don't know if you noticed, but because lockdown is now about to unlock and all that, Israel had made a huge play for tourists. There were adverts all over the place, television, billboards, you know, newspapers and all that. And I thought, that's a great place to go. It's a great country, Israel, on the coast in particular, Tel Aviv and places like that, you know. And of course, who in their right mind now would go to Israel?
Well, of course not. And they had such a great record of vaccinations and getting their program under control and so on. It was all heading in the right direction. And maybe this is why this has erupted.
Could be. Could well be. You're absolutely right. First time I flew to Israel was to cover one of the wars there. And I went first class on El Al, not because the Daily Express thought I was an exceptional reporter. It was the only seat left on the plane. And And the amount of security that surrounded the El Al flights in those days was the same sort of security you get at airports now for every other flight, but they were way ahead of time. You know, you could just walk onto any other flight and you weren't even searched and they didn't even look at your passport. But on the El Al flight, no. You went through all sorts of checks and all that. Remember, they've been obsessed by security ever since they were set up in 1948. And of course, you can understand why. But there we are. That's the way things go. Talking about flying around, by the way. Saw this story about this bloke in Australia, and he runs the world's most expensive pub crawl. He's got a single, not a single seater, a single engine aeroplane. It's got 14 seats on it or something. So it's got two engines, actually. I'm just looking at this now. People can pay $5,000. And then over the next 4 days, they go on the world's longest pub crawl between Perth and Sydney, just flying up. For an hour and down, a few pints in the pub, not the pilots, obviously, and then back on the plane and then up and then flying out and then down. What a wonderful, wonderful adventure that would be, hey?
Well, I hope they've got a lot of sick bags on board.
Well, you know, I think these are hardened drinkers. I actually had an experience very like that once. I went to Australia, to Perth, and Perth is one of the most remote cities in the world. There's no other sort of city near it for at least 1,000 miles inland and 2,000 or 3,000 miles seawards into the Indian Ocean. But we were based in Perth, and then we went into Western Australia, which is one of the most remote parts of Australia. And again, we had a small plane, which, you know, seated 10, probably about 8 of us. It was what, you know, we call a facility trip. You know what I mean? A freebie. And And yeah.
That's a great euphemism, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, the facility trip. Yeah, that means you go somewhere for free, just for the benefit of our listeners, get absolutely pissed for a week on somebody else's money, and then all you have to do when you get back is about 6 months
later. Sober up.
Sober up, yeah. But then about 6 months later, when the travel editor reminds you, oh, you were going to write me a holiday piece about, you know, Perth in Australia, and you sort of moan that, oh, really? Oh, do I have to? You know, they've been on a free holiday there for 10 days. Yeah. And that's all you had to do. It was a great wheeze, wasn't it? I don't suppose you went
wheeze.
On...
I just had that very word on the tip of my tongue. Wheeze.
Yeah. I don't suppose you went on many of those, Leslie Ann, because most of the time you were overseas covering like rock stars' concerts and things, weren't you?
Yeah, so I think every single trip I ever went on was a wheeze for that very reason.
Yeah. Well, on my Australian one, the pilot took a shine to me. You know, we got to talking to each other. He was an Anglophile and lived in London. And every time we landed and everybody got off and went into the hotel, he said to me, look, he said, I know a great place. It's just, 10 minutes down the road. And I thought he meant like a car or something. I said, okay. So we walked back to the plane. And he said, yeah. I said, where are we going? He said, I told you, it's 10 minutes down the road. And these airstrips, I mean, they're everywhere. You know what I mean? They're in people's back gardens almost in Australia. And so we just took off and he flew us to this remote little, you know, like mining town or something. And we'd walk into it'd be like a Wild West bar. We'd have three or four drinks. And then we'd walk back to the aeroplane, get in it. He didn't care about how much he had to drink. And we'd fly back to the hotel. It was honestly a magical wheeze. But
there is no way I would have got back in that plane with a pissed pilot.
Well, the point is, in Australia, they have such an attitude about it. Honestly, they just don't seem to care. I mean, I'm not saying they're an irresponsible nation about drinking and driving, but in the outback, there's different rules of living. You know, you have to sort of just get on with it and do it yourself.
Mind you, how many times have we boarded a 747 when the pilot has been over the limit and we haven't been told?
Well, that could have happened many, many times. I think they've tightened up on it these days. But I used to love the stories about how the crews of these long-haul aircraft, you know, you could fly a jumbo to somewhere like, I don't know, you know, Thailand or something, or even LA or something like that. And then the crew get 5 days off before they have to report back to base and fly the plane back. I mean, what a wonderful life.
Yeah, I know. But would you really want to be doing that job, serving people food in midair, cleaning up the bloody bathroom every half an hour? Well, it's glorified, isn't it, really? Yeah.
It's certainly not for me.
No, definitely not for me.
No, definitely not for me. But, you know, for some people, I think for a young lady, I think it's a wonderful opportunity to get around the world and all that kind of stuff. And like in any other job, you have to be ambitious and think, right, I'm going to, you know, move up in the organisation here. And maybe it's a nice place to start. Talking about nice places, Ms. Jones, and you've been to millions of them. I saw a reference to the fact that this week in 1997, the Spice Girls suddenly exploded onto the scene by appearing in person for their first press conference at the Hotel Martinez in the south of France, in Cannes, in fact. Now, I bet you've been there.
Lots of times, covered the Cannes Film Festival. That is a very nice hotel, by the way, the Martinez.
Yeah,
have you stayed there?
No, yeah. I might have had a drink there, I think, but I've never stayed there, no.
Yeah, I've done a few photo shoots there in my time, but that is a hard beat, the Croisette, as they call it, which
what?
Is the main, the Croisette.
Sorry,
which is that,
the what?
The Croisette.
What's the Croisette?
The Croisette is that main drag all along, it's the seafront in Cannes.
Oh, right,
basically.
I have been there.
The main promenade, the main drag.
Yes.
And during the film festival, you know, it's just covered with film crews. People in evening dress at 10 o'clock in the morning, because none of them can stay in the main Cannes itself. They've all had to find accommodation out in the hills and in other villages because there's just not enough room.
Is Nice the next town?
Yeah. You fly to Nice to get to Cannes. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah.
And so all these crews on modest budgets, they all have to stay out of town.
Yeah.
And you have to be in black tie, evening dress, to be able to attend the film festival events.
Yeah.
So they're all dolled up to the nines in the blazing heat from you know, 7 o'clock in the morning when they've set off. And by sort of 6 o'clock in the evening, everybody's evening dresses are really bedraggled. Yeah. They're all sweaty. Their hair's hanging down. But it's that keeping up appearances thing that you have to look the part. So it's very odd trawling around Cannes during the hot sunshine all day long. Yeah. In a bloody evening dress. It's horrible.
Yeah, well, I've never done it. I tell you, I did it one time, and the reason we were there was nothing to do with the film festival. It was the fact that Chelsea had got to the semi-finals of the Champions League and were playing Monaco. Now, is Monaco near there as well?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Just along the coast there.
Yeah, that's right. So we flew to Nice, and you're absolutely right. When we landed in Nice, there was a message for us at the airport. It was myself and Alan Brazil, and it was from the Chelsea chairman, Ken Bates, inviting us to his villa in somewhere like, you know, in the south of France, somewhere for dinner. We never made it because we were working that evening. We were doing like a fan forum thing or something like that. But I remember after we'd finished a job, we were coming back along that road you're talking about, and Al, who knows that part of the world better than me, said, "Oh, let's nip in here. They do the best glass of red wine on the Riviera." So, and I,
that is a claim to make.
Well, for Al, you know, any glass of wine is a great glass of wine.
Any glass of wine, the last great glass of wine.
Yeah, but I didn't know the place at all. So we went in there, and Al ordered this particular bottle of red that he was going on about. And I tasted it. I said, I mean, look, my ability to taste wine is zero. I wouldn't know a £5 bottle of wine from a £500 bottle of wine, to be honest. But as long as it's red and wet, it's fine. So I tasted
it. As the actress said to the bishop.
Yes. Oh, come on, Miss Jones. Please, you know, the family show.
It's your mind. It's not mine.
Yeah. So anyway, I was saying, yeah. So we finished the bottle and I said, we should have another one of those, shouldn't we? I said, yeah, sure. You know, and I'd been looking at the menu and it wasn't that long before that the euro had been introduced in Europe. OK, so I'm still looking at prices, which I thought were francs. So I looked at the price of this wine and I completely misread francs for euros. I thought the wine was £25 a bottle. It was actually £250 a bottle. We had three bottles, right? And then, of course, I nearly fainted when I got a bill for £750. When I got back and had to, you know, work out all the expenses, I had to put off that wine bill for £750 down as hiring a room for pre-record interviews and all sorts of things. I got completely dumb because I'm pretty stupid.
Oh, God, that's a terrible mistake to make. But what did you do about the receipt? Because, you know, they were always demanding accurate receipts from us for our expenses.
I think I put it in the washing machine and then took it out again. You know what I mean? Left it in the pocket of my shorts or something like that. But anyway,
clever. Yes, that's not bad.
Yes, exactly. Yes, that's what I thought. I thought it was pretty good. As I say, I'm not a wine connoisseur at all. I do like the south of France, but as always, I feel very uncomfortable in hot places, so I'd only want to do it if I was in a swimming costume all day or somebody. Have you ever been on the yacht in the harbour at Monaco?
Yes, I went to a party. It was actually in Cannes, back in Cannes. I was invited to a small, perfectly formed party on board a yacht and woke up there the next day under one of the banquettes at the back.
One of the what? The tiny boats?
The banquettes.
The banquettes.
I use the term advisedly.
Oh, Miss Jones, I don't think we want to hear any more about this story.
No, come on, it's your dirty mind. It's those little kind of bench things that lift up and you can keep things inside them.
Oh, yes, you know? I know, yeah,
Like little sort of Ottoman type things.
Yes, yes.
Are they called banquettes?
Banquettes, yeah. So you didn't come to grief then during the course of the evening?
No, I was fine. Yeah. Just one of those parties that went on far longer than it should have done.
How did you get back to shore?
Well, you'd walk. You just kind of climb off the boat and trot up the gangplank and off you go your shoes in your hand. You mustn't wear high heels, of course, on board a boat.
No, very good.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Right, okay, folks, thank you very much indeed for tuning in and listening to Life on Planet Porky. I'll just reiterate the last one before the pubs reopen, although reopen probably in name only, but that's an adventure for next week. And actually, Miss Jones, on Monday morning, I will be doing Jeremy Vine on Five show, and I am told, although I don't know this for certain, that we're going to do a bit of a conversion of the studio and turn it into our own pub. Inside the TV studio. So that's something I'm really looking forward to.
Yeah, that sounds good. I can't remember that having been done before either.
Oh, you're being a bit facetious there, Miss Jones.
No, I'm absolutely not. No, I'd be quite interested to come and have a go at that.
Yeah, okay, very good. Now, we talk about landmarks and birthdays and all that. I'm really sorry to have to report that in this week, many years ago, and I can't remember exactly which year it was, Bob Marley died at the very, very tender age, I think, of, oh, here, I've got it here, Jamaican reggae star Bob Marley, yes, found it now, yeah, died yesterday after this was on May the 12th, 1981, died yesterday of a seven-month battle against cancer. Marley, 36, who with his group The Wailers was the world's best-known reggae star, died in hospital in Miami. Many of his records were million-selling hits, including No Woman, No Cry and Jamming. That is one of life's great tragedies, is it not?
Well, it really was, because he had such an influence on the world, didn't he? I think, reggae had been around for a few years, since the 60s, actually. Yeah. And people sometimes say, what is reggae? To this day, people are saying, what is reggae? And Bob Marley was the person who introduced it to the world. So we're very familiar with the sound, yeah, without really knowing where it came from. And it's actually, it arose from a phrase in Jamaican patois, which is reggae, reggae, R-E-G-E, R-E-G-E, reggae, reggae, which literally means rags or ragged clothes. Oh. And it suggests a ragtag sort of hodgepodge of other musical styles, yeah, out of Jamaica, such as ska, which people have heard of, and Jamaican mento, blended with jazz and R&B from America. So it was sort of dancehall music gone street, really. It's got a very infectious rhythm, yeah, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Infectious beat. But the common themes in the lyrics of reggae are romantic love, moving into Rastafarian, the influence, the love of God, and, of course, poverty, racism and government depression.
Yeah, yeah.
So it brought lots of causes to the fore. And through the spotlight on the plight of the common man in Jamaica.
And isn't it all based on a king from Ethiopia or something?
Well, that's Rastafarianism, which Haile Selassie, which is, and God, they know God as Jah. And do you remember the Jimmy Cliff film, The Harder They Come, which sort of brought reggae music to international attention? Bob Marley became this music's superstar, and he became a worldwide legend. And yes, it was a great tragedy when he died of cancer. Yeah. His children, in fact, took the music forwards with a group called the Melody Makers. And I was presenting a TV show back in the mid-80s, and we had the Melody Makers on.
Oh.
And I thought they had a lot of potential, but they didn't seem to stick around very long.
No. Do you remember this one? Reggae, reggae, reggae. Here comes Johnny Reggae. Johnny, Johnny Reggae, lay it on me. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do remember that pop single, but it wasn't reggae, the actual music. It was just the name of the guy, wasn't it?
Yeah, but it was just a takeoff, I think. It was one of those, you know, crazy records from the 70s, I think. But there we are. I see Denise Van Outen is on the way back. I do like Denise Van Outen. I think she's so sparkling and lively and bright, and she seems to be good at everything. She's been a stage actress, hasn't she, in Carousel, and she's, been a DJ and a presenter. I have to say, I met her, you know, once or twice briefly. I think she's lovely.
She's got a very nice demeanour. I think, isn't she plotting to bring back The Big Breakfast on Channel 4 with Johnny Vaughan, who she is to present it with?
There has been talk about that. I think she's involved in quite a lot of projects. I saw her being interviewed on TV this week, and they did show some footage of those days. There's a backstory to that, isn't there? They were once great friends. They presented... did they present The Big Breakfast after Chris Evans or before him?
I think it must have been after.
Yeah, it must have been after, mustn't it?
Paula Yates did it originally, didn't she?
Bob, oh, did she?
It was Bob Geldof's programme, yeah.
Oh, right, of course, that's right. It was Bob Geldof's
Paula Yates used to do the interviews in bed. So
with
the
Michael Hutchins.
Michael Hutchins was one of them, and that's when their affair started.
Yeah.
Yes, but but she used to interview her subjects in bed.
Yes, that's right, or lying on the bed anyway, as I recall. So Johnny Vaughan takes it over, Denise Van Houten, that's how she was introduced to the world. Also, Kelly Brook was Johnny Vaughan's sidekick as well, and only because she was so glamorously good-looking, you know. But everybody, they're very unkind to people to Kelly Brook. She's now obviously the kind of supermodel, but everybody said she was too thick to do it and all that kind of stuff, you know. I thought she was great, but anyway, there we go. But Denise Van Houten and Johnny Vaughan went...
Doesn't she say Van Houten?
Van Houten, probably. Yeah, you're probably right. Denise Van Houten. Yeah, I keep saying Houten, don't I? But, you know, they're very successful. They went off in other directions. I worked with Johnny at TalkSport Radio, and he's a great guy. Very, very different. I mean, you know, a really puzzling guy. You never know what he's going to say next. And, you know, you go out with him, have a few drinks and all that. He's got a remarkable mind. But then then I think Johnny went to like Heart or somewhere, didn't he? Or Capital or something. I can't remember which one. And then they brought Denise back to try and rebuild the pairings. And they fell out because it's the same old syndrome who gets top billing. You know what I mean?
And also money. I think there was some discrepancy in who got paid what.
Yeah.
And they were renegotiating their contracts. And they discovered, or she discovered, or he did, that one of them was getting much more money than the other one. Probably him.
Yeah.
And she probably challenged it because she's that kind of a girl, not to take things lying down. And I think it all fell apart from them. But they seem to have patched up their differences.
They do. And I was going to say, I'm very glad they have, because I like both of them individually. You know, I mean, I don't know Denise Van Houten. I've only, met her a couple of times. But I know Johnny very well. And I think they're good for each other. So I'm glad they've made it up. Talking about pairings on TV. And now, I know you're not a great TV watcher, particularly in the mornings, Miss Jones, but GMB, Good Morning Britain, are still desperately trying to plug the Piers Morgan gap. And, you know, they're trying all sorts of options. And this week they had Alistair Campbell sitting in Monday through Wednesday. One of the reasons was it's Mental Health Week, and Ali's done a lot of work for mental health and still is doing it. And so they had him on. And, you know, it's very interesting to see the way they're trying all these formats. But actually, you can't replace Piers. So I think they've got to reshape the thought of the whole show, you know what I mean, rather than building it round sort of, you know, a Piers character.
I heard a rumour that he was having second thoughts, that he's rather missing the limelight, the influence that he wielded, and having that sort of massive audience every day, which suited his ego and his personality, because we love Piers. He's very good at what he does. I did hear a rumour that he's been having second thoughts and that he might think about renegotiating and going back.
Well, I've heard similar sort of things. And by the way, when you have the platform 3 days a week on one of the biggest, you know, breakfast morning shows in Europe, of course you're going to miss the availability of it and, you know, then all the prestige that comes with it. But again, I have to stress, I thought Piers was incredibly brave to take the position he did when he made a decision. I'm not going to apologise. I don't think I've done anything wrong. So you would miss it. Whether or not he'd go back, I'm not sure whether they want each other anymore. You know what I mean? It was a very specific sort of relationship. You know, Piers was this towering sort of figure, and he was an umbrella over the whole of the show. I'm not sure what they'd want again. I mean, I'd have him back tomorrow. I thought he was brilliant, presenter. But, you know, there's other people. But anyway, there we are.
The ratings have really suffered, so I'm sure they'd have him back like a short.
Well, it's a funny old business, ours, isn't it? And we all have to come to compromises and deals in the end to try and get it all sorted out. I've got a piece here. It says, watch out, Boris. Hollywood hard man Ray Winstone has hit out at the government after being forced to pay hundreds for COVID tests in England, while the same abroad are free. So that's Ray Winstone having a go at Boris. Have you ever met Ray Winstone?
I've met his daughter. She used to get in the Groucho Club quite a lot. Jamie Winston is his daughter.
Yeah.
She's an actress as well. I've always found him a little bit typecast. He seems to play the same role in everything he appears in.
I totally agree, but he's very good at it. And that's why people always cast him in that sort of, you know, East End hard man type role. His first film, as you may or may not remember, it's not a film I think would have particularly appealed to young ladies as you were then. You're now still a lady, but not quite so young, but not old, obviously.
Oh, thanks. Keep digging.
No. But he starred in a film called Scum, and it was about a Young Offenders Institute where you had to, you know, fight for your life to survive. And he eventually came out on top as the king of this institute by just about beating everybody else and all the wardens up, you know. And that established his reputation for the rest of his life, literally, as the hard man and in the hard films. I sometimes, when I'm flicked through the channels in the daytime, come across Robin of Sherwood. And the star of that was Roger Moore's, Sean Connery's son, wasn't it? Jason Connery. Right. Mm-hmm. And the bloke who plays Will Scarlet is Ray Winston. But I've met Ray a few times. He's a big West Ham fan. So when I used to go to the old West Ham ground, you know, I was in a box there. He was in the box next door. And I've met him at football tournaments. I remember once we did a whole programme with him in Germany during the Germany World Cup in 2006. And he is great fun. He's everything that he is on screen. You know what I mean? He's cheeky and he's cockney and he's witty and he's always got a twinkle in his eye and having a laugh and a shout. So I have to admit, I do like him, and good luck to him taking on Boris. I know that shopping is something that you're not terribly keen on, Miss Jones, but we've talked about the high street before, but I had a terrible blow hit the other day. I went back into a shopping centre near me that had been closed because of lockdown and only recently reopened. And I walked in and I walked around to see, you know, what was open and what wasn't, how did it change and all that. I got to the end, and the end on three floors used to be Debenhams. And all that was there were the roll-down shutters and nothing. And that really brought home to me the destruction of our high street. And then when I came out, I looked on my phone and thought, is this just selective to find out that every Debenham store in this country has now been closed? I mean, that to me is a landmark. My mum worked in Debenhams for 35 years.
That was then. This is now. Department stores are doomed.
Yeah, they are.
Most shops are doomed, frankly.
Yes,
the future is online. More and more people are ordering more and more stuff, and it's all getting delivered directly to their homes. The lifestyle is changing, and people do not want that day out in a shopping centre or on a high street anymore.
No.
It's so much easier. I hate browsing. Mm-hmm. I hate trying things on. I've always hated all that.
Yeah.
And if you can just go online, tap, 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 order something, stick your card on, and somebody brings it round 2 days later.
Yeah.
I mean, how much better is that? How much more efficient is that? I used to know people who would go to a shopping centre for a day out, and they'd have lunch there, and I can't think of anything worse.
Plenty of people used to do that. I mean, you think of Bluewater, which is off the M25. Think of the Trafford Centre in Manchester. Think of the Metro Centre in Gateshead in Newcastle. Think of the I don't know, Nottingham anywhere. I've been to loads of cities where we've been working, you know, and ended up in a shopping centre to go and get a new pair of trainers. And then there's a pub next door and then there's a restaurant. Yeah, literally, I've spent days in shopping centres just because it's just been convenient to have everything in the same place. But I totally agree.
It's very shallow, isn't it? I mean, they're temples to materialism, aren't they, really?
Temples to materialism. Gosh, you sound like an eco-warrior, Miss Jones.
I probably am one deep down.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, talking about eco-warriors, I'm going to find out just how posh you are. Do you call your dinner or supper?
Supper, darling.
Supper, there you go. Right, so 20 signs whether you may be posh or not. You call your dinner supper. Do you call people darling? Yes, you've called me darling on this podcast, haven't you?
All the time, especially when I forget their name.
Oh, really? Oh, I call them mate when I can't remember their name. Hello, mate. Or if it's a woman, my dear. You know, which sounds very condescending, but it's not. It's just because I can't remember the name.
My dad used to say if he didn't know somebody's name and it was a woman, he'd call them lovely. And women used to bloom when he said that. You know, they'd glow in that sort of lovely female way.
Yes.
And I always thought that was such a charming thing. It's quite a Welsh thing to call people lovely.
Yeah, but these days you would get rebuked for doing that. You know,
absolutely,
please don't be sexist to me, you know, and all that kind of stuff. That's what you get these days. I don't understand it. Anyway, to press on, did you go to a boarding school?
No, darling.
No, right. Have you got a wine cellar?
No.
Right, okay.
No, I've got a lot of wine, but it's not in the cellar because I don't have a cellar.
Okay, fine. How many paintings of your ancestors hang on your walls?
I've got no paintings, but I do have photographs of my grandparents and great-grandparents.
Oh, right, OK. Do you belong to a private club? The answer is yes, isn't it, Miss Jones?
In fact,
more than one, I was going to say, yeah. Do you refuse to ever discuss money?
No. No, I discuss money quite often. I think that theme has passed. I think it used to be at a dinner party, we shouldn't discuss religion, sex or money.
Yes.
But nowadays, everyone seems to be obsessed with those things.
Yes, they do. I totally agree. Do you speak in Latin phrases? Not in Latin, but, you know, do you use Latin phrases to express yourself?
I do write quite a few Latin phrases in my books because sometimes they are just, you know, the phrase that I need that there isn't an English equivalent for.
Yeah.
But I always make sure I explain it at the back in the notes.
Right.
I'm a great fan of that because I believe in keeping those things alive.
Yeah, I agree. I like Latin expressions. And in fact, I was texting Joe Royle, the former Everton football manager.
In Latin?
Well, funny you should say that, you see, because sometimes before games, I'll text Joe and say, you know, looking for 3 points tonight, Joe, what do you think? How do you think we'll do? And Joe will send something back. But quite often, Joe intersperses his responses with Latin phrases, which I then have to look up, right? You know, because, and this is a football manager, I think he's over 70 now, Joe, but he went to Quarry Bank School, which, of course, was Lennon's school, wasn't it? And that's why he called his first group the Quarrymen, wasn't it?
Absolutely, yes, indeed. Mm. I've got a great little book, which I've had for years. It's called Le Mot Juste, which is a French phrase for the exact word, the exact right word.
Right.
And it's got sections in ancient Greek, Latin, French, German, all kinds of phrases that we use routinely. Such as we say we use the word schadenfreude when to mean when we enjoy somebody else's misfortune, which obviously is a German word, but it explains the derivation of those words. And I use it constantly because I'm always looking up the exact meaning. You never want to use a word incorrectly when you're writing stuff because it's there, you know, it exists
in perpetuity.
So you've got to get it right. So I'm always thumbing my way through that book.
What's the one caveat emptor? What's that? Is that buyer beware or something?
Caveat emptor.
Caveat emptor,
yes,
what's that?
Buyer beware. Yeah, buyer beware.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you one reason why Joe might be into Latin expressions and the reason why I was first put onto them is because our football club, Everton Football Club, our motto is nil satis nisi optimum. Do you know what that means?
Okay. It's something to do with never being satisfied with...
You're absolutely right. The exact translation is nothing but the best.
Okay, yeah.
NS, nil satis nisi optimum, is nothing but the best. And that's been the motto of our club since we were founded in 1878.
Very good.
Yes.
That's really
very
good. I can't remember my school motto, but that is in Latin as well.
I can't
remember it now.
They always are.
I think it's great that, you know, it keeps us inquiring. It's good to keep these things alive. And also, of course, legal language has a lot of Latin phrases.
Yes.
Medical language as well. Because the reason they used Latin originally is because it was universal. So you didn't have to translate stuff. It was there as a sort of base language.
Yes.
So you see all the names of plants and trees and so on. Those are all in Latin.
Yeah,
sort of classified names.
No, I totally agree. Now, just getting back to whether you're posh or not, Ms. Jones, what do you call the toilet? Do you call the toilet the loo or what?
Don't really call it anything.
I call it the bathroom. I think that's a...
Yeah, I think I say bathroom as well. I don't say bathroom like you just did.
No.
I say bathroom. Nipping to the bathroom. Yes, that's exactly what I say.
I always do. And I learned that in America. And I thought that's a much nicer... I hate the word toilet because it sounds like something in a brick-built house at the bottom of the garden. You know what I mean? Mm.
And toilets ugly, lavatories ugly.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah. So ever since
Lou is horrible. Who says Lou?
Yeah, exactly. I totally agree. The first time I remember being in an American restaurant, you know, in New York somewhere, and I heard somebody say, "Where's the bathroom?" And I thought that's a great word. I like bathroom because that covers everything. You know what I mean? You don't have to, feel embarrassed about it or anything. And there you go. So I always covered it. Right, another one here.
They used to say the John, didn't they? Which I thought was stupid. I mean,
or the
imagine
can.
If you were called John.
Yeah, or the can. Oh, he's on the can. I mean, no, it's horrible, isn't it?
No. That sounds like someone sitting on the dustbin.
Yeah, well, exactly. So do you call a napkin or a serviette?
Definitely a napkin. I get really, really annoyed with people who say serviette.
Why?
Because it's wrong. It's a napkin.
Sorry, so you stick with napkin?
Yes, serviette is wrong. And it just makes the hairs on my neck stand up on end when people say serviette. It's something that my kids will tell you. It really irritates me. So when they want to annoy me, they will say, there's a whole list of things they say. Mm. Because serviette is one of them. And they will all look at each other and then stare at me and go, Hoover. Because I absolutely hate it when people call vacuum cleaners Hoovers. Hoover is a brand name. Like saying a Vauxhall or a Porsche.
Yes, you know, I totally agree. And finally, do you call champagne champers?
No, it's champagne.
I call it bubbly, if anything. You know,
fizz. I might say fizz.
Fizz, yeah, or bubbly, or shampoo, I sometimes call it. Get the shampoo out.
No, that's horrid, no.
Yeah,
no, it's champagne, or it's the Moët, or it's the Dom Pérignon. So we use the brand for champagne. But
yeah, that's a good idea.
No, I would only ever say champagne.
Well, I like Moët et Chandon. I suppose that's because it was in the Queen's song, wasn't it?
Do you keep it in a pretty cabinet?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. It's a lovely line, that. One of the best lines of old Freddie Mercury.
Fantastic song, that.
It was. I totally agree. It still lights my life up when I hear it come on the radio, just the opening couple of bars.
And the name of the song was?
She's a killer queen.
Very good. That's the one.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, finally, just before we go, as I say already on this podcast, you're not a great TV viewer, but have you seen the Warburton bread adverts over the last 2 or 3 years? They get the most incredible people to star in them. The latest is George Clooney.
Well, it's probably his biggest starring role. I mean, what has he really done acting-wise?
Well, I know. He's 60, by the way, Clooney, this week. But I just happened to see a feature in one of the Sunday Colour magazines. The boss of Warburton has decided to spend absolute fortunes getting people like Clooney, Robert De Niro, Sylvester Stallone into his TV adverts with himself. And so this guy's proud boast is, I've only ever been on television 3 times, but my co-stars were Clooney, De Niro and Stallone. I mean, I think it's a brilliant marketing ploy.
He really used his loaf, didn't he?
He used his loaf. Miss Jones, you haven't lost it, have you, after all these years? Utterly fantastic.
What I'd like to ask him, this guy, Mr. Warburton, is has he sold enough loaves of bread to recoup the cost of all these superstars?
Well, of course, that's the vital question, isn't it?
Yeah, but I wonder if absolutely. He has, because he must have paid them shed loads of money to get them to come and advertise a very sort of run-of-the-mill, daily kind of boring product like a loaf of bread. Because Warburton's bread is not exactly, it's not the Rolls-Royce of bread, is it?
I see lots of Warburton bread lorries around. I don't know whether that's just because, you know, I've taken note of the advert over the last year or two, but I seem to see they're very colourful. They're orange lorries with big... slices of bread on the side, and I suppose they would be because they contain a lot of bread, the lorries.
The lorries themselves look like loaves of bread.
They do. You're absolutely right. They look like a sort of packed up loaf of bread. You're absolutely right. De Niro is interesting because he's also been in a car advert. I can't remember which car it was, but I wonder whether, you know, he's reached a stage of life when he's got divorced or something, and just like John Cleese literally had to take any load of rubbish that he could just to get the money. John Cleese was awful in those adverts for the AA, do you remember?
Yeah, he really was. But I think what it shows is that everybody has their price.
Yes.
And, you know, once you find out what that price is, yeah. It brings everybody back down to the same level, doesn't it?
Certainly does. It certainly does. Right. OK, Ms. Jones, thank you very much. And thank you to our millions of listeners. And just to reiterate, the next time you are listening to us, folks, the pubs will be open, a day I've been yearning for at least the last 12 months. So, Ms. Jones, get your diary out. It's time for that wander down Fleet Street. Until then,
I can't wait to buy you a drink. So you shut up about this.
Yeah. I don't worry. I will. Okay, folks, thanks a lot. Be back with you soon. I didn't know the place at all. So we went in there and Niall ordered this particular bottle of red that he was going on about. And I tasted it. I mean, look, my ability to taste wine is zero. I wouldn't know a £5 bottle of wine from a £500 bottle of wine, to be honest, but as long as it's red and wet, it's fine. So I taste it.
As the actress said to the bishop.
Yes. Oh, come on, Miss Jones, please, you know, the family show.
It's your mind, it's not mine.
Yeah. So, anyway, I was saying, yeah. So we finished the bottle, and I said, we should have another one of those, shouldn't we? I said, yeah, sure, you know. And I'd been looking at the menu, and it wasn't that long before that the euro had been introduced in Europe, okay? So I'm still looking at prices, which I thought were francs. So I looked at the price of this wine, and I completely misread francs for euros. I thought the wine was £25 a bottle. It was actually £250 a bottle. We had three bottles, right? And then, of course, I nearly fainted when I got the bill for £750. So this guy's proud boast is, I've only ever been on television three times, but my co-stars were Clooney, De Niro and Stallone. I mean, I think it's a brilliant marketing ploy.
He really used his loaf, didn't he?
You go somewhere for free, just for the benefit of our listeners, get absolutely pissed for a week on somebody else's money, and then all you have to do when you get back is about 6 months
sober
later...
Sober up.
Yeah, sober up, yeah.